This is The Guardian.
I'm Jane Lee, and this is The Full Story. An environmental offset is like payback for Mother Nature. If endangered habitat gets bulldozed to make way for a major highway, a similar habitat needs to be protected or offset elsewhere. When this works, developers that profit from the environment give back to it in kind. But Guardian Australia has exposed serious failures in this system, which has triggered multiple inquiries in New South Wales. So how has this policy, which was designed to protect Australian wildlife, ended up failing it? And can this problem be fixed? Today, the problem with environmental offsets. It's Wednesday, the 8th of December. Lisa, what is environmental offsetting?
So you might have heard of the idea of a carbon offset, which is where you pay a little bit extra when you buy your plane ticket to make up for all of the carbon emissions that your flight emits during your trip.
Lisa Cox is an environment reporter at Guardian Australia.
And the airline then uses your payment to contribute to environmental projects. Environmental offsetting or biodiversity offsetting has similarities. It's also a kind of trade, but instead of offsetting the carbon emissions caused by, say, flying, you're offsetting the destruction of threatened habitat that's caused by developments like major roads or airports.
So can you give me an example of environmental offsetting?
So for example, if you're a developer and your project is going to destroy some critically endangered woodlands, you can make up for that loss, in theory, by permanently protecting the same type of critically endangered woodland somewhere else. So you're saving that land, you're saving the ecosystems and the species that live there, plants and animals, from development that might otherwise have resulted in it also being bulldozed.
Right, so it's kind of like paying compensation to the environment for that development.
Exactly. So the way these things are supposed to work is that when you are considering a development and when you're looking at developing a project in an area that's environmentally vulnerable, your first approach is supposed to be to avoid actually causing that damage in the first place. And then following that, your next position should be to minimize that damage. And then when you get to a point where you think, okay, well, we've done everything we can to avoid damaging the environment, we've done everything we can here to minimize that damage, that's when your offsetting comes in as your final option, being that method of compensation.
Okay, that all seems pretty clear in theory. If you can't prevent damage to the environment, you use offsets as a last resort to make up for the damage you're going to cause with your development. But Lisa, you've been reporting on how offsets work for years. How would you describe how this policy actually works in practice?
Well, they're certainly not a last resort. They're actually used all the time to get major projects approved. In fact, in some cases, the use of offsets may be doing more harm than good to the environment. I've actually been researching biodiversity and threatened species issues in depth for about 4 years. And even back then, I had people telling me, experts telling me, people who worked for environmental organisations telling me that there were major problems with offsets.
Right, let's get into these problems. First, talk us through the process. When are environmental offsets needed?
There's not a specific list of occasions or developments where offsets must be delivered in our national environmental laws. The offset system is a policy with some guidelines attached. But what usually happens is that when a developer is going to be developing their project on land that is environmentally significant, for example, it has endangered species on it, they need to apply to both state and federal governments for approval under environmental and planning laws. And often what happens is that when a development is approved, an offset can be set as a condition of that environmental approval. And it actually happens so frequently now that developers from the outset might propose an offset as part of their development application.
Right. So even when an offset isn't legally required, in practice, it's still seen as something that's needed before the government will approve a project in a vulnerable environment.
Absolutely. In fact, offsets are so frequently used as conditions of environmental approval in Australia that the review of our national environmental laws last year by Professor Graham Samuel actually found that offsets, rather than being a last resort in development, were actually becoming the default position that was used by both developers and by governments in order to get developments over the line that are actually environmentally damaging. What we're seeing now is that with major developments or even smaller developments, offsetting can be used with all kinds of things. It's just assumed. So you get your project proposal, we know it's going to be environmentally damaging, and the immediate response in so many instances is, oh, well, we'll just offset that.
So in these circumstances, who is responsible for delivering the environmental offsets in Australia?
In most circumstances, it's the developer that is responsible for delivering the offset. And it is the government, both at a state level and a federal level, if we're talking about nationally listed species and ecosystems, the governments are responsible for making sure developers comply with that requirement.
Lisa, what are the most common types of environmental offsets?
In most instances, what developers need to provide is what is known as a direct offset. So you provide the exact thing that you're destroying somewhere else. You're offsetting the direct impact of your development. So examples of direct offsets could be what's known as an avoided loss offset, which is where a developer might protect another site that has the same environmental values as the location that they're destroying. There are also offsets that provide additional environmental benefits through things like regeneration. So they might look at an existing site that needs significant regeneration and restoration work and think, well, I can actually provide an equivalent environmental benefit by restoring that site. And then there are specific schemes where offsets are traded and sold.
How do you buy an offset?
So in New South Wales, for example, they have a biodiversity offset scheme that allows private landholders, if they've got significant ecological values on their land, they can permanently conserve it under an agreement with the government. Now, what happens then is that offset credits get assigned to that property and then sold in a market. So let's say, for example, I'm a developer and I'm looking for an offset for koala habitat. I can find a property that has offset credits available for koala habitat and I can purchase those credits, thereby meeting my offset obligation, and the landholder who receives payment for those credits, a portion of that goes into a management fund to manage that site for conservation. And then a much larger portion goes to the landholder as profit.
Right. So when you're buying an offset, you're essentially buying a promise that someone else will use some of that money to conserve their property to offset the damage that you're doing to the environment elsewhere.
That's correct. And the idea behind it is to essentially create an economic market for environmental protection. It's basically assigning a monetary value to the environment to make the idea of conserving the environment financially attractive to people who hold properties with high ecological values.
So it sounds like offsets are a kind of market mechanism that provide an incentive to conserve the environment for other landowners. That sounds pretty good so far.
So yeah, if environmental offsets worked as well in reality as they're supposed to in theory, then you potentially have very good schemes across the country. But in reality, you've got instances where offsets are just being bought and sold and traded like assets and speculated upon like property. And then you've got offsets that just never get delivered at all.
So Lisa, how big is this problem? How often do offsets get bought and then ultimately never delivered?
Over the course of the last 12 months, I've reported on a number of different examples of really demonstrable failures with offsets. So for instance, the first story that I reported was about the M7 motorway in Sydney. Now that opened to traffic back in 2006, and there was a reserve that the state government was supposed to provide, had promised to provide as an offset for destroying Cumberland Plain woodland when it built that motorway. Now it's 2021 and that reserve has never been delivered. The site remains unprotected. There's coal mines in the New South Wales Hunter region that, you know, 10 years on, still haven't permanently protected their required offset sites.
Yeah, wow.
Now, these are all examples of failed offsets in New South Wales, but the same thing could be happening all over Australia. The problem is we don't know for sure how many times this happens because there's no national register that's tracking these things. But I think a particularly egregious case is a case that involves the federal government as the developer. It's one of the largest infrastructure projects in the country, and that is the plan to build a second airport in Western Sydney at Badgerys Creek.
Sydney's second airport at Badgerys Creek is well on track with work now officially underway on the passenger terminal.
Yeah, tell me more about that, Lisa, because that airport is a huge development. So I imagine there's a wide range of risks for the environment there.
It's a very, very large development, larger than the Adelaide CBD. And now that it's finally underway, in order to get it to completion, they're permanently clearing about 141 hectares of the critically endangered Cumberland Plain woodland, which is one of the most under pressure ecosystems in Australia, really, but absolutely in New South Wales. They're also destroying 178.8 hectares of potential foraging habitat for both the vulnerable grey-headed flying fox and the critically endangered swift parrot.
Wow, so that's a lot of cleared vegetation, cleared habitat of endangered species. That seems like a really significant environmental loss from this airport. So how did the federal government set about offsetting this elsewhere?
What they ended up deciding to do for their main offset was to protect some endangered bushland elsewhere in Western Sydney, in the suburb of Orchard Hills, on a site that's owned by the Department of Defence to store explosives and run training exercises. So what the proposal actually is that they are going to undertake regeneration and improvement work on that site to bring the habitat up to a much better condition.
So they're destroying habitat in one site and hopefully restoring that same habitat for those endangered species elsewhere.
Correct. The issue with this particular site is that it's government-owned land that is actually already heritage protected. And that particular parcel of bushland, it's a really valuable parcel of bushland in Western Sydney. It's one of the largest remaining portions of Cumberland Plain. And it's actually been environmentally managed for years. There's standard management work that has been going on at that site by Defence for a really long time. So critics of this offset say that it won't actually be delivering any additional environmental benefit because there are activities that were just already happening anyway on a site that really already has some level of protection as a heritage site.
Right. So that means that the federal government's trying to offer a gift to the environment that's already been given.
Yes. In fact, one of the people that we interviewed for this story, Lisa Harold, referred to it as re-gifting to the environment. The particular practice where you protect something that is already protected in environmental offsetting is what is known as double dipping.
So double dipping or re-gifting, either way, it doesn't sound great. What did the federal government have to say about this when you asked them about whether they were indeed engaging in this practice at this airport?
Yeah, so this, it's actually really interesting because you've got a situation here where the federal government is the developer, it is the assessor of the development, and it's also the assessor and the provider of the offset.
So many.
It's ludicrous, isn't it? It is absolutely ludicrous. Like, if you really want an example of when people say we need an independent environmental regulator, like, this is why. So, yeah, so I received a joint statement at the time from the Environment Minister, the Environment Department and the Infrastructure Department, which basically said that the Environment Department was satisfied that the offset plan is enduring, enforceable and auditable. And to an extent, they do have to provide, in theory, annual reports on how they're progressing with provision of their offsets, but their reports are always tabled late.
So did they say anything specifically about this notion that they're not actually providing an additional environmental benefit as compensation for the airport?
No. So they just said that they were satisfied that the management actions were over and above what would ordinarily occur. And I guess it's up to us to decide whether we take them at their word on that, because it's not like we can go out and inspect the site. And there's very, very little detail. So there's a memorandum of understanding that exists between Defence and the Infrastructure Department that in theory sets out actions that they'll be doing, but they're actions like pest control and weed control and things like that. And it's experts that we've interviewed have questioned whether that should really count as a truly additional offset.
Right. So what we have here is a major airport that destroys endangered species habitat with possibly no significant additional benefit for the environment elsewhere. What are the consequences of doing something like this?
Well, I would love to know, because it's pretty rare for there to be consequences for even not delivering an offset, let alone maybe delivering your offset, but it's not as good as it should have been. You know, these are things that would technically fall to the environment departments to require compliance with. But we see routinely that that level of compliance just isn't occurring. And as we mentioned, the offset system isn't legislated in our national environment laws. It's just a policy with guidelines. And that means it's very easy to shift the goalposts at any time. So you see instances where, for example, coal companies, they haven't quite got their offset secure, so they go along to the Environment Department and say, hey, could we have an extension, please? And the extension is granted. And then another extension is granted a year later. And they might be shipping coal. The bulldozing has long since occurred, and the offset is just not in place, or it's not permanently protected. That's why Professor Graham Samuel recommended in his review of environmental laws that there should be legal standards imposed about how offsetting should occur to make sure that schemes are accountable and scientifically credible. But the Morrison government hasn't responded to the bulk of that review.
Next, the people making millions of dollars from Australia's environmental offset system. So, Lisa, we've got this largely unregulated system of offsets. Who benefits from this system?
Sometimes the environment does benefit from this system. There are good offsets in place. Governments that want particular areas developed, and certainly developers who want to develop their projects, benefit from this system. And then you've also got consulting firms who are employed by developers to undertake the work required for the ecological assessments for those developments.
Right. Tell me more about that. What kinds of benefits have you seen for consultants in this field?
So I uncovered a very particular example involving a consulting firm known as Ecological Australia, which advised governments, particularly the New South Wales government, on the environmental offset requirements for major infrastructure projects such as roads to support the new airport in Western Sydney. Some of the consultants who were working for this company personally bought land in these areas and then sold offsets on that land back to the government as offsets for the development that their company was advising on. And they've made tens of millions of dollars from doing this. It's actually over $100 million.
That kind of sounds like a conflict of interest, Lisa, is it?
Well, a former New South Wales Auditor General, a former counsel assisting New South Wales's corruption watchdog ICAC, and a former New South Wales Supreme Court judge have all said it raises serious conflict of interest questions and needs to be thoroughly investigated. As a result of our reporting, there are actually 7 active investigations into this particular problem within the system, including an investigation by ICAC and one more potential investigation that's been listed by the Federal Auditor General. One of the reviews is a New South Wales parliamentary inquiry, which is currently looking into the integrity of the entire environmental offset system in New South Wales. And we've seen professional organisations that represent ecological consultants recently tell that inquiry that the New South Wales government needs to develop clear rules for managing conflicts of interest and the potential for insider trading in environmental offsets. But we should also point out that there are mixed views on whether the practice is or isn't lawful, and the people involved in these particular transactions have said that they never had access to confidential information and that they at all times made the appropriate declarations regarding conflicts to government.
So it sounds like there's quite a bit of scrutiny on offsets in New South Wales right now. What's the political appetite for reforms in this space?
From the New South Wales government, there's actually been quite a large response. Recently, the New South Wales Environment Minister, Matt Keane, said that our reporting had exposed what he called quote-unquote appalling practices.
Well, I think it's clear that there needs to be root and branch reform of the scheme, both from a policy level and an integrity level.
And that the government would be reforming environmental offsets.
Right now what we're doing is undertaking a comprehensive review of the offset scheme in general.
He acknowledged failures in the systems and he promised that there would be reforms at both a policy level and an integrity level.
How it's being applied, the governance structures around it, whether it's got integrity, I think the public has every right to know.
What kinds of reforms are people proposing for offsets in New South Wales and elsewhere in Australia?
Well, the New South Wales government hasn't signalled exactly what reforms it's proposing. But from the New South Wales inquiry, we know people would like to see large changes, such as making certain types of habitat off limits to development. Examples raised were habitats that are now so endangered, they're actually on the brink of extinction. So that includes places that are breeding sites for the regent honeyeater, which is a critically endangered bird, and the Cumberland Plain woodland, which we have destroyed more than 90% of. We also know that people would like to see systems that make offsets more traceable so that the public can easily look at, say, a coal mine or a residential development, and you can see what offset was required for that project, where it is, and whether it has actually been delivered. The federal government is currently developing a national offsets register in this vein, but it hasn't had much to say about the problem of offsets more broadly, including problems with offsets for its own developments. New South Wales aside, I'm not sure what's happening in other states, but we know there are absolutely problems with offsets there too. But we haven't really explored that with our reporting so far. So what other states think about these issues, we don't really know.
So it sounds like there are lots of problems with the current offset system we have in Australia. What does that mean for the environment more broadly?
So offsetting, a system that is meant to protect the environment, is actually causing harm to it and is leading to continued losses of, in some cases, ecosystems that there just aren't a lot left of. This is a really big problem. And if you want to sort of just cut it down to the bare basics, we are talking about decisions that we make, decisions that governments make on a day-to-day basis about which species and which ecosystems get to survive, you know. And we're getting to a point with some habitats that there's so little of them left that actually finding offsets for those things are really, really difficult. And so when you're talking about the last remaining pieces of a habitat, of an ecosystem, or the last remaining populations of a species, it's about making a choice about extinction. That is the very simple fact of what this all comes down to.
So if our offset system isn't working to protect the environment, then what's the point of it? I mean, is there an argument that we need to just scrap environmental offsets altogether?
There will be instances where offsets absolutely shouldn't be permitted and absolutely shouldn't have been permitted. There are also going to be examples of good offsets where an environmental benefit has occurred. People are looking for a system where you are getting the environmental benefit that is promised and that benefit is demonstrable, and the people who are required to provide that benefit are held accountable to make sure that they do the things that they have promised to do as a condition of their environmental approvals. The bottom line is we need to be honest about when they're working and when they're not. It needs to be a genuine offset. It has to provide an additional environmental benefit. And if it's not, then we have to ask ourselves, why are we allowing the habitat to be cleared in the first place?
Thanks to environment reporter Lisa Cox for her time. You can find more of Lisa's reporting on environmental offsets on Guardian Australia's website, and we'll put some links to her recent articles on the Full Story page. This episode was produced by me, Laura Murphy-Oates, and Ellen Leibeder. Sound design and mixing by Camilla Hannon. Full Story's executive producers are Gabrielle Jackson, Melanie Tate, and Laura Murphy-Oates. That's it for today. Catch you next time.